Good morning. You are listening to Raven Radio. Today is Thursday, July 25th, 2013. I'm Holly Keene, and this is Raven News. The second year of the Sitka Fellows program is underway. The seven-week program gives participants housing and studio space on the Sheldon Jackson Fine Arts campus and complete freedom to pursue any sort of project. Bessie Young is a Sitka Fellow originally from New Jersey who's been studying for her master's degree in Ireland.
I've been working on this project in Belfast and interviewing elderly women with Alzheimer's and dementia. And I've been doing a separate portion of the project that involves memory in the landscape and trying to look at the links between memory gaps that just young people have with healthy memory and the memory gaps that someone with Alzheimer's or dementia has to help younger people understand and empathize with the elderly.
Young, like the six other Sitka Fellows, is under 30. She's been involved in working with the elderly since her undergraduate years at Amherst College.
If you are comfortable with a difficult topic, that's an area you should really pursue and help other people deal with, and I deal with it myself through the artwork.
Young will use her 7 weeks in Sitka to continue work on her master's project. She plans to spend time in Sitka's senior care facilities, getting to know the residents. Young is reluctant to call herself a photographer. She says she is a struggling artist and student, but she does have a solid sense of purpose behind her work.
A criticism of photography and something that I struggle with photography a lot is whether or not taking a photo of someone is exploitative. And if you're just taking that shot, what is the context? Why are you taking that shot? What will it be used for? And what is the message that that shot delivers when it's, especially in the digital age, when you just get photos out of context. And I try to understand a person as a whole, and I'm more interested in capturing a feeling or a moment or a person than I am in getting that stellar shot. And that's why I've been using a lot of video, because I feel like running a video and sort of capturing someone talking and listening and leaving that open space for them to be who they want to be is less objectifying than sort of just taking a picture and walking away.
Like last year, the 2013 class of Sitka Fellows is a diverse group. Among others, there is a playwright, novelist, technology innovator, cultural blogger, and a banjo player who creates immersive, deeply visceral sound poems. Tully McLaughlin helps run the Sitka Fellows program, which he co-founded in partnership with the Sitka Fine Arts Camp and Sitka legislator Jonathan Christ Tompkins. He says the second year of the program is just as important as the first, if not more so.
So we're still in that tender, adolescent sort of building period where all the major growth takes place and you have to prove out your concept. You have to prove that you're not just you're serious about what you're doing and it has sort of real purpose in the world.
The Sitka Fellows will be on campus through August. Near the end of the month, the Fellows will host an open studio to share their work with the community. The leader of a major Christian denomination is in Alaska over the next several days. Catherine Jeffords Shorey was elected presiding bishop of the Episcopal Church in 2006. The church claims more than 2 million members in 16 countries. But before she started in ministry, Jeffords Shorey was an oceanographer. During a stop in Sitka, she had a chance to meet relatives of both Jack Calvin and Ed Ricketts. The two men did extensive search in Sitka and co-authored Between Pacific Tides in 1939. The book redefined the study of marine biology and remains an important text to this day. She spoke with KCAW's Ed Ronco.
Ricketts, Calvin, and Hedgepeth published the version of that tome that I used in my early career, and a descendant of Ed Ricketts lives here, and a descendant of Calvin lives here.
So that must be, I mean...
It's remarkable.
Put that in context for people who aren't scientists. How is the, are these the rock stars of your field? Or
well, absolutely. Ed Ricketts worked with John Steinbeck, and people often know that connection about Cannery Row and the log from the Sea of Cortez. Ed Ricketts and John Steinbeck took a trip into the Gulf of California in the 30s, I believe, and explored what was living there at a time when people were still doing the basic biology to name the species that lived in a place.
There are often conflicts, or tension might be the better word, between science and faith. How do you feel about that tension? How do you handle that tension in your role?
Many people in the general public believe that there's a conflict because of what they hear from very conservative Christians. I think it's more a myth than a reality for many people. There are two creation stories in Genesis, in the first book of the Bible, and they tell rather different stories about how things came to be the way they are. The first one talks about creation on 6 days of the week and God resting on the seventh. And at each point during that week, God says it is good what's been created that day. And God gets to human beings and says it is very good. The second creation story is the one about Adam and Eve. And it tells about what goes wrong in relationships between human beings and God, and human relationships between human beings. They tell rather different things about what it means to be human and be in relationship. There's a third creation story, and it's the great scientific, cosmological, evolutionary creation story. And they're all true. They all tell very significant truths about what it means to be human in relationship in the two Genesis stories. And the third one tells about the mechanics, really, of how things came to be the way they are. I don't have any trouble holding all three of those together. I believe I've got a much richer view of the way things are than I would if I only used one of them.
So many churches right now are experiencing schisms or division or difficulty dealing with, you know, a lot of current social issues, whether it's gay rights or even just theology differences between a congregation and its pastor. Mm-hmm. The first thing I want to ask is, can those be avoided? Or is that just kind of a natural mm-hmm. evolution of people and an institution?
I believe that conflict is an opportunity. It's a sign of the possibility of growth and development. If it's well managed, if it gets too strong and too arduous, if it explodes, it's not being used for the possibilities it has. If there's no conflict, there's no possibility of growth because there's no tension, there's no invitation to look at things in a different way. We're going through a time of, you know, as Phyllis Tickle calls it, it's the 500-year rummage sale. Every 500 years, the church or religious communities look at the way things are and discovers that something's really not working. You referenced earlier the tension that many people see between religion and science. That's a conversation of the Enlightenment. We're coming to a time when people are more comfortable with a variety of viewpoints, and that is in significant tension with people who believe that there are only black and white answers in the world. And we're wrestling with that kind of transition right now.
That's Presiding Bishop Catherine Jeffords Shorey, leader of the Episcopal Church, during a visit to Sitka on Tuesday. The Southeast community is the first stop during her tour of the Alaska Diocese. She has 8 stops altogether, including Anchorage, Kenai, Kotzebue, Kivalina, Fort Yukon, Fairbanks, and Nenana. You can hear a longer version of our conversation with Jeffords Shorey. It's on our website, kcaw.org. A clarification now to a story we ran during this newscast yesterday. In mentioning the semifinalists for Sitka's municipal administrator job, we listed the degrees held by the candidates. But we accidentally omitted that sentence from one of their biographies. Mark Gorman holds a Master's of Public Health from the University of Hawaii. You can listen to and read about all the candidates on our website, kcaw.org. Commercial trolling for king salmon in southeast Alaska is done for the summer. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game announced this week there will be no second king salmon opening later this summer after the troll fleet reached its allocation of Chinook during a 6-day opening at the beginning of the month. Patty Scannis is Fish and Game's troll management biologist for Southeast. She says catch rates in that opening were higher than expected and higher than last summer.
We had gone into the opening thinking that the catch per fleet per day would be somewhere around 10,000 a day. And now that most of the numbers are in, it looked like it was over 14,000 a day.
The fleet caught more than 84,000 kings in that opening, well above the target of almost 63,000 for the fishing period. Recent years have seen 2 summer king salmon openings, typically one in July and one in August. But that won't be the case this year, as the fleet won't be able to keep Kings again until the winter season starts up October 11th. The Kings averaged just over 12 pounds, which is small for King salmon, and the average price was relatively strong at $4.61 a pound. In the past years, a second King opening had meant a short shutdown for all troll fishing in August. Scanna says she does not know if that will be the case this year.
Since we will not have another King opening, we won't be required to have a closure for a fair start for the King opening, and the regulations call for at least a 2-day closure for a fair start. So the only reason for a closure would be for coho conservation reasons, and we aren't going to make that decision until the first week of August, which is typical. That's what we do every year. We'll assess the coho run, and we'll look at catch and catch rates for all the various gear groups. And if things keep going the way they are, I could foresee there's a chance that we may not need a closure. We're seeing some record coho catches and catch rates right now.
Trollers are also targeting chum, coho, and even pink salmon this summer, the first year ever for a targeted pink salmon troll fishery. Troll-caught sockeye are fetching $1.59 a pound for the summer season. Coho's $1.32 a pound, chums are 64 cents, and pink salmon are 33 cents a pound. And that's all for Raven News. If you've missed any of our stories or you'd like to hear them again, please visit us online at kcaw.org. Now a look at Sitka Zone weather. It's currently 56 degrees downtown Sitka. Today, expect patchy fog in the morning, numerous showers, highs around 62, light winds becoming southwest 5 miles per hour in the afternoon. Tonight, mostly cloudy with scattered showers, lows around 54. You are listening to Raven Radio, KCAW in Sitka.